4, approximately 11 a.m. Interviewers are Wayne Clark and Mike Russert. Could you give me your full name, date of birth, and place of birth, please?
Sure. My name is Edward Abramson. I was born September 21st, 1920, in Manhattan.
Okay. What was your educational background prior to entering service?
I was at NYU and City College for half a year and another half a year, about 1 year.
Okay. Do you remember where you were, how you heard about it, and your reaction to Pearl Harbor?
Well, I would be selling newspapers. We had, at that time, we were selling papers at night, and it was on a Sunday. Uh-huh. And of course, when we heard it on the radio, we had to get out to sell papers about 2 or 3 hours later, downtown Brooklyn. Well, it was a headline now, so we were going to sell a lot of papers. We didn't know what Pearl Harbor was, we didn't know anything about Pearl Harbor, but we knew that this could be a headline, and headlines meant selling new daily newses. At that time, we would sell it for 2 cents a piece. We made 60 cents a hundred, order for 140 a hundred. And we figured, well, today would be a good day. We'll make about $5, $6. That was it.
Uh-huh. Do you remember your personal reaction to the news? Or
we didn't know where Pearl Harbor
that
was.
Most didn't.
They,
yes.
Didn't know where it was.
Right. Okay. Were you drafted or did you enlist?
I was drafted. I came home one day and said, Mom, I received a letter from the President of the United States, and she wasn't too happy about it.
Okay. Where did you go for your, you went in November of 42, where did you go for your basic training?
I went to, what had happened, December 7th, we went in there. Initiated in December. By December 7th, we took the train to Camp Upton. And I'll never forget when my sister, my mother was coming with me to Grand Central, and we were going to one little place around the corner, and they were expecting us to come back. Uh-huh. But we didn't. We went the other way. When that happened, I met the mom, and my sister said, Mom, we're leaving. And he turned around and he asked what had happened. They saw two MPs grab a hold of me on a collar and bring me into the train. We came to Camp Upton and we received our shots and got on the train. And of course, checked out the different points we had. I had about the same amount of points. We figured, well, we're going to the Air Corps. We wound up at Fort Jackson, Columbia, South Carolina, and we lined up. We figured, well, we're taking a break at the train. We're probably heading towards Florida. And we had this colonel in front of us, microphone, harsh voice, and he was killed. And he said, you know, all you fellas, you're in the infantry, and 6 months from now, most of you will be dead. And we're all looking at each other. About 10 days before, we sleep in our home, in our beds, at home. So that's the initial, mm-hmm. That's how we found ourselves in the infantry.
Had you ever been away from home up to that point?
No, I haven't, no. Mm-hmm. I haven't. From there, they brought us into, they had the 397, 398, and 399th Regiment, the 100th Division. And of course, I was assigned to the 100th Division, to the 399th. And then I was assigned to the S3. Never heard anything about the S3. But later on, I learned that the S3 was the pulse of the regiment. The Army moves only on assignments. Uh-huh. The S3 doesn't say a word. The Army doesn't say, keeps quiet. And that's how it works out. We work from the division to the regiment. And the regiment now, S3, was operations, consisted of the colonel, full colonel, the major, the master sergeant, sergeant, and myself. These are fellows. Uh-huh. And one thing about the Germans, they knew that you had to destroy the S3 in order to stop anything from happening for at least 8 or 9 days till new replacements come in. Uh-huh. And the most important thing, they kept the S3 very tight, because they knew they wanted to make experts up from us. And that's what we were. We were experts on the, we knew exactly how to read a map at the last moment. It had to be done. So we had we didn't realize the seriousness of it until we went on maneuvers in Tennessee. And of course, we had 8 problems, one a week. Uh-huh. And we would destroy every problem. Well, that's fine. We didn't have to wait. We waited for 4 or 5 days later for a new problem. By the time the maneuvers were over, in 8 weeks, we landed in Fort Bragg. That's when we woke up and said, my gosh, hey, that's a little good. 8 times 6, 8 out of 8. And just no good. Well, what happened basically, I'll just go ahead of myself a little. We had 175 straight days of fighting there, see. And we had lost 2 S3s out of 3. We were the only one that wasn't destroyed. And one of the things I have to give credit to was the colonel. We were never under direct fire, but mainly 88s. And it would go way out, but just try to reach out to us. And we'd be near the heavy weapons. Heavy weapons, you have an A, B, C, D. D would be the heavy weapon. E, F, G, H. H would be the heavy weapon, and so on. We referenced 3 battalions. And what had happened was we'd be near the heavy weapons. And the thoughts behind that was that the Germans would be afraid of fire to that in that area, because they would relocate where the fire was coming from, and we'd have to depend on the OP's observation of the people. Mm-hmm. But we were able to, they themselves would know where they are, the Germans. So they kept on going into rifle companies and going over our heads. The toughest fighting we had, is it most dangerous as far as we were concerned, was in the Vosges Mountains.
And can I go back a second before you get to that? When did you go overseas?
Right, we went overseas. We landed in Marseille, I think October 20th, 1944.
Okay. And did you go in convoy?
We went on trucks.
Okay.
We had to relieve the 45th Division mm-hmm. at Baccarat, France. And we landed, the following day, or a couple days after we landed in Marseille, they gave us our ammunition, grenades, everything else, put us on the trucks, and we went there 2 nights and 3 days. And it was a big rainy night, and we had to find holes. We took the holes from the 45th Division, see. And here we were laying up, the water was up to our necks, and we're laughing. What are we laughing about? Welker, another one of our buddies, couldn't find a hole. It's amazing, sometimes we think back, you're in the water up to your neck, and you're laughing, see? And now listen to me.
Okay, so that was your first combat, then
yes.
You went into combat then, and you said how many days did you...
Yeah, about 175 days. And that was the end of it. When the time we took Stuttgart, that was the end of our fighting. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, we had our problems with Stuttgart. It seemed that they had the French army, which had an army around, and they had the Senegalese coming to raping their women. And they would ask to stop. And if they didn't stop, we were going to have to drive them out. Now, here we had just finished battling, and now we're in a... Yeah, now here's a big army. We have to drive out an army. So they gave the army till 12 o'clock midnight, and they didn't go out. And 6 o'clock, we're going to drive out. 6 o'clock came, they gave us all our ammunition, and we had to get out, thankfully. It was a terrible thing. You know, we had to do, it was like a whole army fighting a division, actually. It didn't work out, so apparently they gave orders for us to get out. And then eventually, when things settled down, us back to Stuttgart.
So this was a French?
Yeah, the French army, yeah. Senegalese, African army.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us about some of your combat experiences up to
sure.
that point?
There's one experience that we could never forget. Of course, with the S3, again, we're moving all over the place. Now we're coming up to Lemberg. This is just at the time, right before the Battle of the Bulge, and Lemberg, Germany, and we didn't realize there was going to be some real fighting. So we sent in 1 battalion, and there were 2 companies were really hurt badly. Then we sent in another battalion on the other side. Before you know, we sent 3 battalions at one time fighting, to get through, and each didn't know where they were. And it was amazing because a shell. An 88 shell landed about no more than 10 feet away. And Colonel Tyson and I were on a map together. So the other folks couldn't. See, at the time, when these things happen, when a battle happens, the one who's on the map has to stay there with it. And we stayed there for 48 hours without any sleep whatsoever. We because the plot was going on. But what we said at the very end was all over. After the war was over, we exchanged conversation with Colonel Tyson and I, who eventually became a general, Brigadier General. And we said it was so amazing. We didn't care for our lives. We were so concerned only that we shouldn't get killed for the sake of the men that were out there fighting. The psychological thing, it didn't matter about us getting killed. It was a matter that we wanted to stay alive for their benefit. Isn't that amazing? And it was really true. The only ones who could know about it was us, two of us. Very interesting company. It was an interesting conversation we had. Okay. Another area, which is very important, my brother and I, he was in the Air Corps, and we met together for a day or two. He said he's going to, because my mother and father are split, and mom is home alone with my sister, and said he's going to join the volunteer to go to, as an air gunner, rather than air radio. Okay. And he went. It was during the Hollandia raids and everything else at that time. And I lost track of him, like, completely. And now we're in our trucks. We're in Marseille, we're in our trucks. It's the last mail call that we would have. You know, for many, it was the last mail call, see. And there I get a little letter, a small 6 3/4 envelope. See. And on the corner it had Staff Sergeant Irv Abramson, 180 Crystal Street, Brooklyn, New York. So I was one of the happiest guys going, as far as I was concerned, that was it. Most important thing that happened. Now, a lot of guys were concerned about going to the front. It didn't bother me at all because of that letter. So that's something you never forget.
Yes, right.
He was home, and that's all that counted. Another area, you don't forget, after the war was over, then we stopped fighting. And now we're in a home. Now we're picking up homes now, wherever you are. That's where we're staying, see. And we're hearing that the radio is going, now they're cheering in London, and here we're sitting this way, as quiet as could be. we weren't able to enjoy that at the same time. Another area was, most of us had one point that we needed, one more point to get home. Couldn't get home, 56 points, and most of us had 55, say, whatever. And now we're coming home. We're coming home and we expect the bands and everything else. We landed in Staten Island and there's one guy in. Oh, that was it.
Now, were you ever there for the occupation?
No. We were there until when the war was over. We waited a while and now they prepare us to go to Japan. Mm-hmm. So we're ready to go to Japan, and then the atomic bomb. Heard about that, the war was over.
What was your reaction when you heard about the atomic bombs?
We were glad. We couldn't care less about what happened. We were happy that we were coming home. We were very depressed for a long time. Because, after the war was over, here we are. We're this little town. A lot of guys were disgusted. And I got a letter from my brother, because I was writing letters home, apparently. And he said, all the heck out of me. You're alive. If it's all over, you're alive. Be thankful. And I showed it to a lot of fellas, and that sort of helped them out a lot. They lost their depression type of situation. And then you wonder why our guys got, very few guys did the fighting, mostly guys were in the back. And you wondered why, how a guy could get in there and be happy. He was in the foxhole. Why? Because he wasn't out on patrol. The guy on patrol, you figure, gee, why me? See? And what happened was, he was happy that he was on patrol, not being dead. It's amazing, see?
Yeah.
Another chair. I'm just thinking a little.
Right.
We came in to a field one night, and we were tired, and it was a house, a barn, so we wanted to go in there, and the colonel said, no. And we moved away about 100 yards away. The INR, the intelligent reconnaissance, came in that night. They were in that barn. One was completely destroyed and killed them all. And these little things you remember, my gosh. So we really were very thankful that we landed that amount of time. They had you might have had 103rd, I don't know. You might have some guys in 103rd. They were young fellas. You send them over, didn't even know how to put a round in their rifle. And in less than a week, 2/3 of that division, 15,000 men, were destroyed. So I like to meet guys, because we, when we were up in Fort Jackson, they were young kids, see? And they were like our sister outfit. We were the 100th, they were the 103rd. And so I like to meet them, because they would, that you would hear a lot of stories there on that, real stories out of tough. How they came in, they were destroyed almost immediately, and they were captured, everything.
Where do you think your most difficult combat was?
I think it was the Vosges, because you were in the forest, and the 88s were coming in. And it wasn't where they were going to land. Mm-hmm. They hit a tree, and thousands of tree bursts would hit you. And that's where we lost a lot of men, in that area. We ourselves didn't know where to go. There was no place to go, and hopefully that we weren't hit by a tree burst. There was no shelter, none whatsoever. And they would fire A-38s at the Vosges Mountains. There were forests there. In fact, when I go to Atlantic City sometime on the boat, I'll see a bunch of forest trees. I'll remind myself of that. It's amazing how it stays in your memory. See?
Did you have enough personal equipment? Plenty of warm clothing or boots?
No, we were ridiculous. We had our overcoats. And they never changed anything. When we finally got out, we took our first shower. There was pimples all over the place. On there. Just living conditions in there was the worst of the worst. There were times I'd be laying in a hole there, and I'd wonder, what am I doing over here? But the conditions, what could they do?
Did you suffer from frostbite at all?
Well, some guys suffered from that. I was very fortunate. A lot of guys were fortunate, some guys aren't.
Did you ever get the winter boots, or did you just have the regulation shoes?
No, they gave us boots.
You had the boots?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. We had boots, we had that helmet was the best thing. Did everything for that helmet. Mm-hmm. That helmet did everything for us. And then sometimes you have your rations, and then when if you broke through the German lines, then you had a little more freedom, see? What the Germans would do, they would zero in on a particular area and then leave. And every now and then, they'd lob some in there. So it was a matter of, you see a kitchen there. The kitchen would consist of a couple of those. And you'd cross, but you slip down. Well, you got up very fast, but you know they'd be coming in. Who knows when? See, they would zero in on these areas. We lost a lot of men, a heck of a lot of men there. It was something that we never spoke about at the beginning. I think fellows are beginning to talk about it now. See, the thing that hurts is we have an organization, the 100th Division Association. Uh-huh. And what's heartbreaking is you see all these guys' taps. The list is going down the line. See, when I turned 80, I'm 84, going to be 84 now. And I was saying no when we joked around with other guys, that she's at 79, 8 and 79. And that's bad. Boy, that's bad. Notice that if you don't find too many 80s, let's get to that 80s. Now the guys are in the 80s already. And we're saying, hey, there's very, very few 90s now. Let's get there. This is the type of humor we have. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you see fellas with their family, and they were missed by one little shot, that whole family would have been wiped out. Mm-hmm. These are thoughts that you have when you're that close to it. Nobody's a hero. Everybody goes through a mess. One fellow was driving a truck, and Howard, his name was, right? And he left, and they put him in a rifle company. And all of a sudden we hear him, he's a hero. We got a hold of him one day, and said, what happened? He was in one rifle company, and one of the squads was caught, the whole platoon, rather, 51 men was caught. And he was on the other side, and the machine gun was hitting him that way, and there was no way of getting out of that. In the meantime, they must have spotted him, so they have to take your rod and put it out there, and put it in there so he could have a better leverage. The Germans would have. Mm-hmm. But while they were doing, and now we knew they were going to spot him, and he ran. And as he ran, he tripped. And as he tripped, he threw his grenade, and he wiped him out. It's a hero. You never know.
Yeah. What were your relations like with the French people? Did you ever have much contact with the French people?
We didn't have much contact with them. We really didn't. We felt sorry because we knew there was nothing there. Everything was destroyed. Everywhere we went was destruction. Mm-hmm. Then when the world, when we were on a furlough, we had to pass Berlin, you know, Brussels rather. And for the first time we saw a window. What does a window look like? Mm-hmm. So that's how we were. It was in existence. And when you look back, you don't really know yet. Oh, go ahead, mention this. It's very, very important. We had gone from Pforzheim to Stuttgart, to Rome. And as we kept walking, we saw these people. We thought they were prisoners. They were like walking in a trance, just walking and walking. And as far as we were concerned, we were tired ourselves. We kept going this way, they kept coming the other way. And then we went a little further, and sure enough, it was a labor camp. They were prisoners coming out of a labor camp. How the infantry works, and I'm really leading to this, mm-hmm. How the infantry works is that when the Germans retreat, then we send the cavalry in, and their job is just to continue going after them, and when they stop, then they stop, mm-hmm. until the party comes in. When they passed over, then the cavalry were the first to be in that camp, but they didn't know what they were. And they kept going. And that camp was free because it was a breakthrough. And then by that time, we were coming in. Well, in Stuttgart, Germany, that's where we were. See, during this Passover, there's a Yom Kippur holiday which is coming on now. See, and here we had Jewish soldiers and the Holocaust victims who were together for the first time. See. No, we couldn't get near them because they were just diseased and everything else. We had orders to keep away from them. They were diseased. And they bring in the camp that way. But when things got better, and we had, by that time, things were getting better, so we were able to get together. I met the sister, met a lady, and we were talking Yiddish, see. And she said she came from Paris, and her sister, there she knew, was at this address, and I told her I was going to Paris for 3 days. So I took her address, I put it in my pocket, and that was the end of it. I'm in Paris now, after 2 days, I'm gonna leave the next morning. And I look in my pocket, there's the address. And I figure, I'll throw it away. It doesn't make sense. But I figure, okay, it's in the air, early in the morning, 10 o'clock. I'm not too far from the place I'll walk. This is like 4 or 5 landings. And then I'm doing a neighbor court, opened the door and I told them, I showed them this. So I think they moved over here. I spent the day going over one place, and finally about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I figured I couldn't do it. Then it became a challenge after a while. Now I'm going, I'll never forget, 12 o'clock midnight, I came out of the underground station, and there was a big light, big clock, 12 o'clock, and the address was just about a half a block away, and I went there and I rang the bell, and you could see it, somebody coming. You could see from the door, there's a window on top of the door, there's some light way back there, and they opened the door, one guy opened the door, and I could see a lot of people in the kitchen way back, and so I gave him, I told him I gave him the letter, and he ran there, and that scream so great that I walked away. Maybe, and I, to this day, I don't know why I reacted that way. Yeah, but I must have been tired, shocked, who knows what it was. So I wrote a story on that. See? And I put down, there's a clock by the station, never realizing that there's loads of other clocks by the stations. And that was it. So they found each other. Mm-hmm. And I was never able to find the results of that. See? Mm-hmm. But they had the address of her on the other side where she was in Stuttgart. Thanks, honey. Thank you.
Were you up to that point? Were you aware, or were the soldiers aware of the camps at all?
Completely unaware. Mm-hmm. Remember that all we did was fighting.
Right.
And there was no newspapers and nothing, mm-hmm. that we knew about.
What was your general reaction when you saw these people and found out about this?
We felt very, very bad because we saw the how they looked. They looked like human skeletons, really. And they were, and then they were treated. Even here, they're now they're freed, but they're freed by tired guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the only ones that were able to help them was when the Corps came in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were now able to help them and give them the food and everything else. But mm-hmm. they were two groups fighting, the victims and the ones that helped them, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Although we never had anything to do with helping them.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans left them, and so they came. There was no such thing as, hello, how are you? There in the days. We initially thought they were prisoners, as I mentioned before. But later on, we realized what they went through. But we had gone through a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have that understanding too much. We had that understanding as far as knowing how bad it really was to exist. But we really, truly didn't know what was going on until we learned from newspapers of pictures that were there.
Okay, when did you finally arrive home?
I came home, let's see, February, the middle of February, I think, of 45.
Or 46.
46, please forgive me. Sorry.
Do you recall, just going back to when you were in the service in Europe, do you recall your reaction about when you heard about the death of President Roosevelt?
I guess we were two. It was hardly, you couldn't get any type of reaction from
mm-hmm.
each of us. Because we're tired guys.
Yeah.
We're tired, so he died, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And
okay, I was just curious.
There was no such, you have to understand that we weren't in the same frame of mind as a civilian.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't in the same frame as fellows who were in a corps, at Corps. They might have read things, but we had nothing to read, we had nothing to see. And someone died, but we were seeing mm-hmm. all guys dying.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that struck us, every infantryman knows when to remember the first guy that was killed and his number. McCarthy 32649520. I don't know my social security number, but I know that.
Huh.
It's a good way to test somebody sometimes.
Yeah.
If they're in the infantry. Amazing.
Uh-huh.
All our friends, we talk about it.
After you were discharged, did you make use of the GI Bill at all?
No, I didn't. I went right to work.
Uh-huh. So you didn't use
I ignored the 5220. Did 2 weeks, and that was it.
Okay.
Because you have to understand there was breakdown with my parents, and things were pretty rough, depression time. And the war was over now, so we wanted now to send money home, real money home, that we weren't able to do our soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And Mom would get $50. We were 26 for the keep and 24, whatever, would go to them. So I think back, it was like a nightmare. We remember seeing one fella the last time he was in a boat with us, on the boat coming over. And then we saw him later on, 6 months later, since. And we could never say anything. It was like a nightmare. Just like a nightmare to each other. What happened? I hadn't seen you on a boat since the boat. Just we landed in Marseille. Now here we are now in Stuttgart. What's happening? See? It's that's why I think it's good that you're doing something like that. You don't hear that. It's everyday life, like laughing in a foxhole. They're up the water, raining. And you're, what are you laughing about? What? You can't find a foxhole to go in there, see? And you still laugh about that, but yet, here we are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you join any veterans organizations?
Yes, I joined the Veterans of Foreign War. Okay. Then I got involved in politics. I got married right away, see? And I got involved in politics. I was involved for 40 years in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that kept you away from, I wouldn't join it, but I would have to be involved in speaking in front of groups, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we met our governor. He was just a kid. Did you see him every so often?
No, not that often.
Otherwise, meant to give him my best when you
okay.
see
him. Do you, did you ever keep in contact with anyone that served with you?
Yes, we have this 100th Infantry Division,
right.
See. And six of us together, we signed corporation papers. Five of us passed away already. I'm the only guy in there. See? And we meet once a year at a convention. At the beginning, I was meeting them, but then after I got so involved in politics, and would come at the time when at the primary time. Mm-hmm. We have primaries, so I was not able to be at the convention, but we generally would meet a few fellows together. We'd be at a restaurant in the city, and we'd discuss things. You know. Mm-hmm. And then also we see how old they're getting. Yeah. Some of them have crutches, and also you look in the taps, comes out, the paper comes out three or four times, and going to pages like that, these guys are lost. They lose. Mm-hmm. We're losing a lot of guys. I don't know whether they realize it or not.
Yes.
The stage, I went to one fella, I said, no, this, we were on the front line. This is a real front line. We know we're not coming back.
Yeah. How would you say that your time in the service changed or had an effect on your life?
I don't know if it had an effect on my life. I was very thankful, I think, that I came home alive. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, all the things that might have happened was minor. The most important thing, the bottom line, was that I was alive. Mm-hmm. And I was unscratched, see. And thankfully, I was not able to, I was able to get away from the things that, see, guys without bodies and everything else. And it didn't affect me as much as it affects a lot of people.
See? Yes.
I've seen guys walk shell-shocked in like this, in there. Other guys, no legs at all. One fellow was on a mine, and I went down to see him. And he lost both his legs and everything else. One day we were walking on the, I thought to the kids, say, I had to leave my company. I had to go find a tree. Now I want to catch up to them. So I said, now they're going along this way, see. I feel I'm going to have to through there and catch them. I'm running down on the grass, and I was like, stop. I realized it could be a minefield. Mm-hmm. Well, it took me maybe an hour for a little part to catch up to them. What, looking for a step, where I could step on there. We had a lot of incidents, see, that came and go.
Did you get to see any USO shows while you were over there?
No. We went from Marseille right into combat. Stayed there for a few days and into combat. Continuing on to Stuttgart, and the thing was over. There was no such thing as maybe we stopped fighting for maybe a couple of days here and there when there's a breakthrough. New Year's Eve, all right? It's Christmas for New Year's Eve, 44, right? We were right under the bulge. Effort from the bulge and went to Wassey. And what happened? Shells started to come in. So we thought it was our artillery. Dumb bastards. Gosh. Mm-hmm. What are they doing? They're drunk and they're hitting us. We didn't realize that they're hitting. It was the Germans, see? And the Hun 17th, and we came in, wherever we were, we dug holes right away, immediately. Right? Even the colonel was digging holes. That's what it was. And the artillery, the cavalry rather, never dug holes. They never were in the front. Yeah, so they were able to get onto their trucks. Well, the Germans apparently knew it, and they broke through that line. See? And that line was through the area where they protected us at that time, that evening. And now we know, 6 in the morning, holy mackerel, the breakthrough was gone. There's nobody in front of us. So we made that quick trip around to get the S3. Went along a particular ridge, we landed into another part of the country, and we were trapped. They called on the 36th, that's a Texas division. They saved our life. They really had a 24-36 hour walk, you know, and they finally broke the lines and they saved us. Otherwise, we'd be captured in another Puerto Rico. So I often say, Texas is for me, 36. If I find a couple of guys from the 36th, see, because sometimes you can tie in some of these stories. You know? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And they made that forced march to help us. They really were tough guys. Uh-huh. 36th and the 45th, they were tough.
Could you hold that photograph up,
sure.
And show, thank you.
Can you see it?
Oh, yes.
Yes, you can focus right in. Where and when was that taken?
This was in Paris. The war was over. Uh-huh. It was in Paris on the way to London for a 10-day holiday. And we stopped in Paris for a day or so on the way.
Okay.
Now you're finding out some stories, Gloria.
Thank you.
right, well, thank you very much for your interview.
Thank you. Take care.